Welcome to the Birds of Alberta podcast. I'm Chris Fisher, co-author of the best-selling field guide, Birds of Alberta. This podcast, we will be talking about, of course, the birds of Alberta, maybe some other species of wildlife, with each episode dedicated to a single species that's found here in the province. Now, while we'll talk a little bit about detailed rich things like field marks and distribution and calls, most of those things, of course, can be found on the wonderful apps that we have on our phones nowadays. So instead, we're going to be storytelling, talking about the experiential qualities that we have with the birds of Alberta, because really storytelling is really one of the best ways to make an emotional connection. So with all that being said, there really is no better bird to start a podcast of this nature out with than our own provincial bird of Alberta, the bold, the beautiful, the striking, the great horned owl. In 1977, the government of Alberta, under the premiership of Peter Lougheed, decided it was a good idea to join the ranks of pretty much every other Canadian province and United States in getting a provincial or state bird. And they tasked the elementary schools to come up with a list and ultimately decide what our provincial bird should be. And I remember as a kid in grade two in St. Mary's Elementary School in Lethbridge, that this choice came upon us. And really, to no surprise, the final decision was reached by the young kids of Alberta to grant the provincial bird status to the great horned owl. Now, of course, owls are very charismatic and well-liked by pretty much everyone. So it was a pretty logical choice, one would think. But in 1977, you have to remember that children were heavily influenced by a very charismatic figure by the name of Mr. Dress-Up and that great CBC early morning show. And one of the characters on the show was a character called Wise Old Owl. And guess what? Wise Old Owl was, in fact, a great horned owl. So Mr. Dress-Up, who had the cultural legacy second only to the Fonz in 1977, probably had a great influence on the children of the day choosing great horned owl. So too also was a fairly progressive media campaign launched in the United States at that time that would have been beaming through our televisions. And that was Woodsy the Owl, or Woodsy Owl, and the famous campaign of Give a Hoot, Don't Pollute, where a mascot dressed as a great horned owl was skipping across parklands in the United States, picking up trash, which was a huge environmental issue at the time. So the combination of these two things no doubt had an influence in Albertans and young Albertans choosing the great horned owl as a cultural symbol for the province of Alberta, and what a good choice it was. Oddly enough, you know, great horned owls, or pretty much no other owl, really gained the ranks of a state bird. There are no owls as state birds in the United States, and there are 50 opportunities to do that. In Canada, there's only one other province that has a owl, and that would be the snowy owl for the province of Quebec, La Fond de Neige, as they call it over there. So for species that are so characteristic and well-liked, it's a little surprising that so few owls have been elevated to the distinction of the provincial bird. But great horned owl is the provincial bird of Alberta. And since 1977, we've certainly seen them adorned public infrastructure, the underpass close to the legislature in Edmonton, very close to the provincial capital, of course, has on the facing of the concrete there, silhouettes of great horned owls. And of course, the best-selling book, Birds of Alberta, that I had a little piece in putting together, also has that beautiful, iconic illustration of the great horned owl coming directly at the readers. Great horned owls are really one of the most distinctive birds that we find regularly in the province of Alberta. They're distributed really throughout the province, you know, from the Cypress Hills and Many Berries all the way up to Wood Buffalo National Park and Zama, all the way back down to Waterton Lakes National Park. So in terms of range and distribution, it's a great choice for great horned owls. A little bit more common in the southern areas of the province, at least that's where we do tend to see them a little bit more. And their silhouette is absolutely distinctive, which really makes a lot of sense because oftentimes we do see them just as the sun is setting, particularly on those short winter days. Going out for a drive in the winter and coming home just as the sun is setting and just crossing paths with one perched upon a power pole or a telephone pole is a very classic way of seeing them and seeing them only in their silhouette being very distinctive, even more distinctive than, well, I guess, the Alfred Hitchcock silhouette that was famous back in the 60s and 70s. Look it up, kids. It was perhaps the second most famous silhouette that the world has ever seen. So they, of course, have those ear tufts, of course, not horns or antlers at all, just very distinctive ear tufts. Some other owls do have those, not many in Alberta. So it is a large owl. About, well, a little bit bigger than a 2-liter pop bottle. So when they do sit up high, they are very, very distinctive. In Alberta, we typically have owls that are a little bit lighter in color. If you look at pictures from the desert in Arizona or down in Florida, for where these birds also do occur, you'll notice that they are much, much, much darker. And this is a ecological rule known as Gloger's rule, that animals that have a wide distribution, as the great horned owl does throughout most of North America, even into Mexico, the northern ones, the northern birds or the northern mammals, tend to be a little bit lighter in color, and that may be because of insulative or camouflage properties. So it makes sense that ours tend to be a little bit lighter overall, never pure white, but often a little bit light gray with that beautiful splotting that they have all over their bodies. Not only are great horned owls the most distinctive bird in silhouette or not, but they're probably the most commonly seen bird. They tend to live in fairly close proximity to humans, not necessarily in the large cities, although they do occur in Edmonton and Calgary in the river valleys. White Mud River Valley and certainly Fish Creek Provincial Park in Calgary will have populations, a few individuals actually, of great horned owls, and they tend to be very famous in these areas, nesting in these areas, but it's really in the rural areas of Alberta where they gain fame. Historically, pretty much any large treed farmyard that would have mature spruce trees or even mature poplar trees or even mature cottonwood trees would have a nesting pair. So they'll often use abandoned nests that are made by crows, ravens, or hawks and take them over early in the spring. That's their advantage. They start nesting in late February, early March, and that's long before anything else thinks about nesting, so they can take advantage of that abandoned real estate before anything else returns and starts thinking about breeding. So that's one of their early season advantages. In farm communities, they are also quite fond of nesting in barns, sheds and other structures, particularly if there's a little bit of an attic up there, a little bit of a ledge that they can lay their nests, their eggs. They don't necessarily build a nest. They just take over abandoned nests of others. So even in a barn situation, that could be a nest of a pigeon or a magpie or a crow or something like that. So they're very well known in rural Alberta for being a farmyard owl, taking care of mice and voles and other things that can be construed as vermins, even northern pocket gophers or ground squirrels in and around farm country. So they're very much welcome there. And historically, landowners are very proud of owls that inhabit their areas. And really, in fact, some of the most iconic stories that came out of rural Canada, rural prairie Canada, can have some OWL characters. We can only think back to Farley Mowat's legendary childhood story, Owls in the Family, where he befriended Wool and Weeps, which were two abandoned chicks that he found as a child growing up in rural Saskatchewan, and raised them. And this is a story not necessarily unique to Farley Mowat. Of course, this recounting of it would be very unique, but as I've learned over the decades, there's not a few young boys and girls growing up in rural Alberta that might have had a officially tame pet great horned owl lurking in the trees as they were growing up through the summers of years gone. Great horned owls have a really great reputation, as all owls do, as being quite wise. And well, the truth of the matter is owls aren't particularly wise. Even though this mythology goes all the way back to the Greeks, there's a famous statue where there's a Greek goddess of wisdom called Athena, who is holding an owl in her hand. And from that time to now, owls are often construed as very, very wise. But in fact, they aren't. If you want to look for a wise bird, look to a gull, look to a crow, look to a magpie. Don't look to owls. In fact, science has even looked into this. They've looked at, well, over 500 species of birds. And in those birds, including owls, they've been able to determine they've found over 200 instances of problem-solving skills. Just think of what your magpies do to get into your garbage and into the bird feeders. You can see intelligence being demonstrated through problem-solving. But not one instance in all these 2,000 problem-solving skills is there a single instance of an owl unlocking a mystery with their brain. They're very good at hunting. That's what they do very, very well, but they really don't figure things out much beyond just swooping down and catching prey. They do so incredibly well, incredibly enviably, but they don't use their brain as much as other bird brains may. But they are very much valued by people for their endearing qualities. And some of that may be due to the fact that, quite frankly, they look like little people. They've got forward-facing eyes. They've got a domed little head. And great horned owls have those false ears that stick out on the top of their heads. And Steven Pinker, a Harvard-based scientist, social scientist, has called this attribute not only that owls have, but also baby seals and other very, very cute forms of wildlife, the geometry of the juvenile face, where humans are predisposed, as you might think, to have an affinity for a face that looks very similar to a human baby. Obviously, we're very tied to human baby characteristics as maternal and paternal instincts, and owls are very fortunate indeed that they can usurp a little bit of our instinctive likings for babies to their own advantage. You know, one of the things I like most about great horned owls, I suppose, is the fact that they nest so early. Oftentimes we get these late winter storms in March where you have these big fluffy snowflakes falling down and thinking that the winter will never end. But if you go for a walk in those conditions or drive in those conditions, you just may be lucky enough to see a great horned owl sitting on a nest. As mentioned before, these are usually nests of that the great horned owls use, but it could be a red-tailed hawk nest, Swainson's hawk nest, American crow nest, various other nests. And there they are busy blanketed underneath this cold, sitting on their nice little round eggs. Not very oval eggs, round eggs. And the round egg is a very efficient design that does not lose a lot of heat. It is, in fact, the smallest area unit that contains something, a circle, a sphere. So very efficient at maintaining as much heat as possible, which is, of course, critical. In very cold conditions, and I've certainly seen great horned owls incubating eggs at minus 20 degrees Celsius. Typically warmer than that, but they can endure some great hardships. So not only are great horned owls known as fierce hunters, they are also fierce nesters as well. And they take about a month to incubate their eggs. So by the time April, mid-April arrives, and all these other birds start returning, and ground squirrels get out of hibernation, and pocket gophers and mice start poking above the snow and crawling around. There is a great feast awaiting great horned owls as their chicks and their young owlets grow so very fast. So they really take advantage of the bounty of spring by getting a little bit of a head start on this, and this is really when they gain their legendary hunting prowess, because great horned owls are known as, you know, kind of the tigers of the Canadian North, and boy, they are great hunters indeed. Throughout the year, they take all sorts of small mammals, even mid-sized mammals. They can take some of our small rabbits, even creatures as large as those large white-tailed jackrabbits that we see around town. They can take those on occasion. They can take ducks and coots. So they're not limited just to ground-based animals, and they're not just limited to things that are active at night. They mostly hunt at night, of course, in the darkness using their excellent hearing, but they can also hunt in the crepuscular hours, those hours between sunrise and sunset, when there is a lot of activity, not only from mammals or birds, but everything else, including snakes and frogs. Whatever is moving out there, they are going to take it. So it's a very, very effective strategy. They have eyes, of course, that are nearly the same size as our own eyes. And the advantage of having immense eyes, as they do, for a relatively small bird, is that they have a tremendous ability to see in low light, about 100 times better than our own eyesight is at seeing in low light. Of course, they have binocular vision, referred to earlier, in that nice orientation where both eyes face forward, just like ours. Of course, binocular vision allows our eyes to overlap, so you get almost stereoscopic vision, and a greater ability of gauging distances. So that's why they are so very accurate at pouncing on things that they can see, nearly 300 meters away oftentimes. So little mice and squirrels that are scurrying in farmyards or forests aren't safe even at the lengths of three soccer fields away from them. They'll typically fly at low altitudes with their wings outstretched. They've got little frills on the edge of their wings, and they just cut through the air in complete silence, and they swoop down and they take their prey, often ripping it apart if it's a larger prey item. And if it's not, they can swallow it whole, returning to a perch, a familiar perch, where they will eat it whole and often perch there the rest of the night. Looking underneath these perches is a great place to find owl pellets, little regurgitated parts of undigested prey that they will hork up, spit up, and it'll tumble to the ground. And these things can be dissected if anyone has a like mind to do so, and you can find out precisely what they were swallowing. So you'll see little bits of bones and teeth and fur and feathers mixed amongst this little pellet, which is kind of a fun thing to do as a kid. They have the ability to crush with their gizzard all sorts of bones. It's a very muscular organ, kind of before the stomach, that really takes care a lot of the things that they do eat. So they're really able to take advantage of really whatever is out there. The Great Horned Owl really is a great homage to the people of Alberta as our provincial bird. It really demonstrates a lot of the symbolic characteristics that we tend to see in ourselves in terms of being able to endure the hardships of the rigorous four seasons that we have, and also to excel in the challenging environments that we have in the province, from the prairies to the mountains, all the way through the northern boreal forest. Like us, it lives in all these places and excels in all these places. And it does give us hope as we travel the highways and byways of the province, seeing it up in silhouette on the lampposts and power lines that dot the Alberta landscape. It is really one of the best and one of the most distinctive birds that we have in the province of Alberta, and a perfect one to begin this podcast with as one of the most emblematic birds of Alberta.